It's showtime for Apple. Meanwhile, Spotify isn't very happy with them. A genetic test for type 2 diabetes, Android Q, Verizon 5G, a new tax app, and saving on spring break. What's going on? I'm Rich DeMuro. This is Rich on Tech, the podcast that tells you what you need to know about all the interesting little things that happened in tech. So this is not everything you need to know about technology, but it's the stuff that I find interesting. And for the average consumer, I think that it's stuff that you should at least be aware of. I'm Rich DeMuro, the tech reporter at KTLA 5 News in Los Angeles. Thanks so much for tuning me in here on the podcast. I do appreciate it. Got a lot of you listening and a lot of loyal listeners. So thank you for that. I do appreciate it. And again, you know, if you've listened to this for a while, it is a work in progress. I don't take anything for granted here. This week specifically, I will tell you that I was not able to take calls. I know every week you're like, okay, is Rich going to take calls this week? Is he not? But this week I do have an excuse. So Facebook was down on Wednesday for like almost all of the day. And that's the day that I normally do my live show where I get the phone calls for the podcast. And so if I don't have that, I'm not able to take the live calls. So we do have a reason, because that was a crazy big outage. Facebook says yesterday, as a result of a server configuration change, many people had trouble accessing our apps and services. Yeah, that's playing it down. No Instagram, no Oculus, no Facebook. I mean, it was rough. I turned to Twitter and LinkedIn, personally. Facebook says, we have resolved the issues and our systems are recovering. We're very sorry for the inconvenience and appreciate everyone's patience. I think it went on for about 14 hours. For me, I just gave up. I was at the gym when I first kind of, well, actually, I first noticed it was a problem when I posted something to Facebook and I noticed it just kind of stopped after 26 comments. That was it. It was like no more comments. I'm like, that's kind of weird. And also the views kind of stopped. I was like, did Facebook cut me off? And then all of a sudden I realized that I couldn't refresh my Instagram feed either. And so I just kept kind of trying and I was like, okay, something's going on here. Then it's when I realized when I went to Twitter that, yeah, there was a problem. Anyway, let me know how you dealt with the Facebook outage of 2019. Definitely affected this podcast, but nonetheless, we got lots of great stuff to talk about today. So let's get right to it. First things first, we now have a new Apple event coming up, March 25th, 10 a.m. Apple is going to hold a special event at their Steve Jobs Theater in Cupertino, California. That's Northern California. And this is on their campus, obviously. So the tagline, every time they send one of these invitations, it always has some little hint as to what they're going to reveal. And the tagline this time around was, it's showtime. And they did a cool little animation of kind of, it reminded me a lot of the Indiana Jones ride at Disneyland, where it has that old timey feel to the black and white sepia toned kind of images. So this is a film reel that's kind of counting down, like, you know, like the old school films used to count down. So clearly Apple is hinting at a Hollywood play here. And from all the blogs and all the reporting and all the rumors and speculation, it sounds like we're going to get two things out of Apple. Number one, some sort of news subscription service. So they bought Texture last year, which is a really cool app that I used for a while, by the way. It kind of gives you unlimited access to all the magazines you can imagine for one price, like 10 bucks a month. So they bought that company. We haven't really heard much about that since then. So we've got that. Now, here's the question. Is Apple going to launch something more than what Texture was? So are they going to build Texture into the news app? I mean, they already have the news app on the iPhone. So they've got the base there. A lot of people check that. Apple loves to tell me how popular that is. And I'm sure it is because it's kind of the default news app that they push on the iPhone. So you've got that going on. Will people pay more, though, to access more news? Now, a lot of people these days have a subscription to some sort of online newspaper, like maybe the LA Times or the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, New York Times. But how much are people willing to pay for straight up news? $9.99 a month? $15.99 a month? I don't know. Right now, I do not have a subscription to any of those services. So I kind of go with what's free online. Would I change my mind for a higher quality service or something that included all the magazines? Maybe. Now, the reason why I ended up canceling Texture is because it was too much. You get every magazine known to man. So what I do is I'd sit down, I'd look at the iPad, and number one, I'd be overwhelmed by all the magazines on there because there were just so many. And don't get me wrong, magazines are fantastic to browse through, But what happened is it would consume all of my time. All of my free time went to browsing these magazines. And so I would just look at all these magazines and never catch up. Yeah, sure, I found a lot of stuff. I also found myself buying a lot of stuff because what are magazines primarily there to do for you? Sell stuff, right? So that was that. I canceled that. I think they offered me a $5 fee to stay. I did that for a while, and then I finally canceled it altogether. So would I subscribe again? Perhaps, but I'm not sure. The other thing that they're announcing is some sort of Apple streaming service for TV shows and movies. And we know that Apple's shooting a lot of TV shows. I don't know about movies, but they're doing a lot of TV shows right now here in Hollywood. And I'm sure they're stockpiling a lot of stuff. But again, are we ready and willing for another subscription service? Right now, I've got my DirecTV Now. I've got Netflix. I've got Amazon. I've got Spotify. I've got Apple Music. I've got YouTube Premium. So again, all these subscriptions add up, and it comes down to subscription fatigue. How many subscriptions can one person have? And it's kind of funny because we're getting back to this day of like the cable, where you paid one price and you got all these different things bundled in, whether you watch them or not. So will we go back to that? And with that in mind, it looks like Apple is going to kind of have some of its own stuff, but then some other stuff as well. So, you know, Amazon has channels. Roku has premium channels, like you can subscribe to different, you know, premium networks through there. So Apple wants to do the same thing apparently with this new service. But the question is, with Apple, is Apple an enemy or a friend of these studios? So remember, when Netflix first came out, all these studios dumped all their old stuff on Netflix. Yeah, sure, you can have the old back catalog of all this garbage. And Netflix was so happy to accept all that stuff, right? And then all of a sudden, Netflix started doing their own stuff, and now they've eclipsed some of the studios. Not eclipsed, but, you know, they definitely have become a force to be reckoned with in Hollywood. Maybe that's an understatement. They are huge in Hollywood, as I speak this, just mere feet from the building that they built for Netflix, which is like 14 stories high, towering over Hollywood, and they continue to build more. This place is enormous. So, again, can Apple compete? And also the way Apple does things is a little bit different. Apple is very secretive. Kind of so is Netflix. Netflix, they have a good PR team, but they are much more secretive, I think, than a lot of studios are. And Apple, even more secretive. So this is something to watch. I'm going up to the event. I'm curious to see what they have. This is the first time I'm going to an Apple event where I don't think the excitement for what Apple is launching will match the event. Usually you go up to an event for Apple and you know you're going to get some sort of crazy new hardware, whether it's an iPhone upgrade, even if you know the whole thing, you're excited for it. This news subscription, eh, and I'm in the news business, by the way. And then also a new streaming service, eh. And if I think about Apple's first two attempts at some sort of entertainment, which was Planet of the Apps, that show, and also Carpool Karaoke, the series, they did a spinoff. Just didn't really work, both of them. They don't break out numbers. They never said it's a hit. So again, March 25th, all questions will be answered at the Apple event in Cupertino. Maybe the most exciting things for me would be a new iPad mini if they come out with that, because my kids could probably use a new one. Theirs is going on 4 years old. And AirPods too. People would probably be excited to have a new version of AirPods. Well, there is one company that's not very happy about what Apple is doing, and that is Spotify. And this is a really, and I said earlier how, you know, these companies have to wonder if Apple is their friend at this point or their enemy at this point, or are they frenemies? So I would say that something like Apple and Google are frenemies, because Google knows that they need Apple to run their apps on their phones. They need it for all that search traffic that they get from Google being the default search on iPhone, which, by the way, they pay dearly for in the billions of dollars to be that default search. Because think about it, with one tiny line of programming code, Apple could change the default search on iPhone to Bing or Yahoo and just ruin everyone's lives. And, you know, I mean, if they did that, that would be bad for the iPhone, because those search engines are not very good. But Google pays for that to be the default search engine on Safari. So anyway, Spotify, they came out and said, you know what, we're not going to play nice anymore. We're finally going to It reminded me of like kind of an ex or like a whistleblower, like a tell-all. It's like, look, I've been treated like this for so long, and now I'm finally just going to come out and tell you my story. And that's what Spotify is doing. They came out with a website that calls it says it's time to play fair. And they kind of went into all these facts and things about how Apple does not play fair with their app. So, of course, anyone can create an app. Apple has to approve it. It's a very closed system with Apple, and they have very specific rules. And Spotify is saying all those rules are meant to make it tougher for someone like Spotify to do business. And I will say, I agree. So here's their first thing. Apple charges a discriminatory tax. So of course, if you have an app through Apple and you want to take an in-app purchase, Apple takes 30% of that. So for Spotify, if they want to charge $10, Spotify is going to get $7 of your subscription money because Apple's getting the $3. Now, I would say in general, I mean, Apple did build the platform, so they have to get something for that. It's not like they can just give this stuff away for free. So I see both sides of that argument. But here's the other thing. You notice this with something like Amazon. This is where it gets very tricky for consumers, because consumers probably don't realize that you cannot buy a Kindle ebook on the iPhone. Nope, you can't. It's almost impossible to do that. Why? Because Apple has to take their 30%, and Amazon does not want to give them that 30%. So if you download the Kindle app, wouldn't it be so nice if you can just buy a Kindle ebook through the app? Yes, but you can't. You have to go to a website and you got to buy it that way. I figured that out the hard way when I sold my book, 101 Handy Tech Tips for the iPhone, as an ebook, and everyone's like, oh, I can't buy this through the Kindle app. And I didn't want to explain to them like how crazy it is, this whole big war between Apple and Amazon, but that's what's happening behind the scenes. So a lot of apps that have a monthly subscription, number one, you'll notice it's a little bit more expensive, so 30% more to do that in-app subscription, or they just don't offer it at all. So Netflix being one of those companies where you can't even get a subscription through iOS. You can't just tap that little fingerprint sensor or use your Face ID because they don't want to give a cut to Apple, which I understand. If you're talking about millions of people, and by the way, what's the easiest way to subscribe to something on the iPhone? Of course, it's going to be with an in-app purchase, right? So these companies don't want to give away a huge amount of their subscription revenue to Apple. Okay, so that's the first one. Apple won't let us share Spotify deals. So anyway, that's a tough one to explain. Apple won't let you upgrade to Spotify Premium with ease. That's another one that kind of has to deal with the in-app purchases. Apple rejects our app enhancements. So again, Apple kind of plays by their own rules with this stuff. And I think this is where it gets really interesting, okay? I'm just going to give you my kind of experience with Apple Music versus Spotify. So think about Spotify as an app. A lot of people are using that as their music app on the iPhone, right? But it can never truly become the default app on your iPhone because Apple does not allow that. They don't let you set defaults, right? You can download the Chrome browser, but every link you click is going to take you to Safari. You can download Spotify, but you can't talk to Siri and have her play music through Spotify, right? She's only going to activate Apple Music. You can have an Apple Watch, but only your Apple Music is going to sync to your Apple Watch. And Spotify says that they've taken a lot of heat for all this stuff, and they are prohibited from streaming on the Apple Watch. They're prohibited from putting their music offline on the Apple Watch. Apple won't let them be on HomePod. And so again, who's right here? I'm not sure. So I think that if I had to explain from personal experience, if you look at Apple Music on the iPhone, the thing I can tell you is that when you sync a playlist on Apple Music and you say, I want to download this music to my phone, it just magically downloads in the background to your device. On Spotify, that simply does not happen. You must have the Spotify app open and your phone unlocked for anything to download. It does not happen in the background. Same thing with Google Photos. You want to have Google Photos on your phone to back up all your stuff? Sure. But guess what? Google Photos can only run in the background for a certain amount of time. Usually you have to open the app to kind of trigger things to make it all work. Whereas iCloud, they're given preference. iCloud can do things in the background. Same thing with Dropbox. They can't do things in the background. iCloud can. So again, this is where it gets to be really interesting with Apple. They have created an amazing device, but if you want to be on it, you got to play by Apple's rules, at least for now. Google is releasing a new version of its Android software called Android Q. And just as a lot of people still don't even have the most current version, which is P, they're already on to Q. This is something that will be released in full later in the year, but right now they've got a beta, so all the nerds are installing it on their Pixel phones, and they're kind of finding out all the new little goodies built into this operating system. So a couple of things that the Next Web is talking about: it's got support for foldable phones. It's got a basic theme engine, which means you can kind of make your device look a certain way throughout the whole device, kind of what Samsung already does. Location sharing is getting more granular. So on the iPhone, you can say for most apps, hey, I only want to share my location when I'm actively using this app. Looks like Android's going to allow you to do that as well. And then it's looking like they're doing more support for portrait mode and depth effects. I thought this was interesting from Mashable. They found a new feature that lets you share your Wi-Fi via a QR code. And again, this is in the Android Q beta, so not many people have access to that just yet. But, you know, if you're at like an event and you've got, you know, your Wi-Fi, you're connected to the network and someone next to you wants to connect to the network, you can just tap share in the settings and it will generate a QR code. And the other person just has to scan that QR code with their phone and they'll connect to the Wi-Fi. So it's kind of an easier way instead of sharing like a long password or even a private password. But this only works with both phones running Android Q, which is like 0.0001% of phones in the world. And if you've been on iPhone lately, I think they're doing it in a very interesting and surprising way. So if you are next to someone that wants to log in or is trying to log into the Wi-Fi on the network that you're on, they'll get a little pop-up on their screen that says, hey, we're going to ask Rich if he wants to share the Wi-Fi with you. You get a pop-up on your screen that says, hey, Rich, this person in your contacts is trying to join the Wi-Fi. Do you want to share your password? And sure enough, it shares it. They get logged in, and it's pretty seamless. It's kind of surprising the first time I saw this. I thought it was really cool. And I think for most people, they don't even know that's a feature, but it's just one of those things that kind of pops up on your iPhone and you're like, yeah, sure. And there it goes. Moving on now to Verizon. They've got their 5G mobile network going live on April 11th in two cities, Chicago and Minneapolis. Now, Chicago makes a lot of sense. That's where Motorola used to be headquartered. I assume they still are. And the first phone that it works on is, surprise, surprise, the Moto Z3. So this is not something where they flip a switch and the whole city of Chicago has 5G, right? This is something where they will turn it on and just sections of the city will have it. But I think it'd be awesome. I would love to go to Chicago and try this out. In fact, I'm considering that because I would love to just have a 5G phone next to my 4G LTE phone and just do some standard things like download a movie on, you know, on Netflix, just do some speed tests. I would just love to see how fast 5G is because I'm fine with 4G. I think it's awesome. You just don't realize how much better a faster connection can be for productivity. And that's what people are going to experience there. So of course, the new 5G faster internet comes with higher price tags. So it's going to be $10 more per month. And I don't know about you, but I feel like I'm already at the max of what I'm paying at Verizon for my monthly service. So I get it, $10 more a month, not make or break most people or many people, or maybe it does. I don't know. I mean, to me, I don't want to pay a nickel more, right? But if it's really that much better, maybe I'm willing to do that. But again, I think it's one of these things where we knew it was coming. And of course, Verizon spent all this money for the new network. They're going to charge people for it. So the other city, like I said, is Minneapolis. And I don't see many people using this network right away because it's kind of complicated to get on board. You can't use your typical phone. Like I said, it's the Moto Z3. You also need a 5G mod on top of that. So it's like this little snap-on back to the phone that will give you the 5G antennas and the 5G capabilities. So again, a lot of people or many people do not have that on their phone. And it's only that one phone model. The other phone that we know is coming out is the Samsung Galaxy S10 5G. That will launch with Verizon exclusively. Will it launch on April 11th alongside this new network? Who knows? Maybe. Maybe Samsung wants to tap into it and take advantage of all the publicity, but maybe not. But I don't think you need a 5G phone in any way, shape, or form in 2019. I know the year is kind of just started, but again, you want to wait till these things are one generation in, okay? The very first phones that took advantage of 3G and 4G and 4G LTE, they were all very basic compared to what we have now. So I say wait until 2020, next phone, go with 5G, don't go with a first generation device, wait till the next one. Now time to share a couple of handy tools I've discovered this week. The first is from Google. It looks like they have finally broken out Google Hotels as an actual tool on the Google website. So before, to go to Google Hotels, they've always had it, but it's been kind of tough to find, right? You had to do a search for like hotels near me or hotels Los Angeles, and then it would kind of pop up. Now you can just go to google.com/hotels, and Google has built a very good hotel website. And of course, they're using machine learning to make it really nice. So a couple of things I like about the Google website is that it gives you price insights. So Google is constantly tracking the prices for all these hotels, and that way it can tell you, yeah, this hotel is really expensive this weekend. And so if I'm, you know, and you might say, well, I got to travel there for work anyway, so what does it matter? Well, if you're a leisure traveler and you're planning a vacation, it's kind of nice to know, ooh, look at that weekend. That's really expensive to travel to Portland. But this weekend, wow, that's really cheap. Let me go to Portland on that weekend. And these are the kind of price insights that you can get from Google, who is tracking them at all times. I love this stuff. So that's number one. Number two is you can kind of sort in various ways. My favorite filter, and I don't always find it, but it's called deals. So of course, like I said, with Google kind of monitoring all the different prices and keeping track of that, it knows which hotels are deals and which are not. So I personally love getting a hotel that normally costs more for less, right? Everyone does. I mean, I think, but Google will tell you in the filter, I just want to see deals. So you can just see the hotels that are deals. The other thing is, if you're a Google One member, which if you have storage with Google, you have some specific deals that are just exclusive to you. These are better prices than you can get publicly. You also have hotel highlights, so you can see like if the hotel has a fancy pool, or if it's a luxury hotel, or if it's popular with families. Again, this is all stuff that Google is getting from machine learning, because if they notice a lot of people mention their family in like almost every review of a hotel, Google and their computers are going to say, oh, this hotel must be good for families. So that's smart. And you can also see which hotels are near a landmark. So if you say something like hotels near Disney World, Google will show you on Google Maps the hotels that are close to that landmark. So that's nice. And you can also get the walking and driving distances. Now, the only thing I'm a little bit uncertain about when it comes to Google Hotels is, are they using all the data available, or is it just partner hotels? So Google in their blog post says, the filter uses machine learning to highlight hotels where one or more of our partners offer rates that are significantly lower than usual price. So maybe I think they mean by partners like all the websites that they jump you off to book your hotel. That's kind of what I'm guessing. But anyway, check it out. google.com/hotels. One more place to research. Firefox has a new handy way to send large files to friends totally free. Now, there's a lot of ways to send folks files, but this one is super simple. It's called Firefox Send. It's something they've been testing for a while, but just bookmark this and you never know when you're going to need it. But when you do, it's very handy. All it is a super simple drag and drop interface. You drag a file up to 1 gigabyte. It generates a link. You send that link to a friend. They can download the file. There's no logins. There's no jumping through hoops. There's no giant ads on the screen, at least that I could see. And it's not trying to trick you into signing up for anything like some of these other services. But again, what Firefox is saying is, you know what? We know there's a lot of file transfer services out there. We just wanted to make one that was simple, that was private. Everything is encrypted. You have control over the file, so you can set an expiration date for your link. You can set the number of downloads. You can put a password on there if you want. But again, you can send up to 1 gigabyte files for free. If you want to send up to 2.5 gigabyte files, you just have to sign up for a free Firefox account. So again, it's send.firefox.com. Next time you need to send a big file to someone or just quickly want to send a file to someone, there you go. And this app I thought was kind of cool. It's called Keeper. This is a tax keeping app. And I know it's tax time. I'm going through all my receipts. I'm sure you are too. And every year I say the same thing. I'm going to keep track of all my receipts perfectly. And sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. I try to categorize things. I've been using an app called Everlance, which I really like, which tracks my expenses and my miles. But again, you have to go through and kind of categorize all this stuff. Well, Keeper, and by the way, I haven't tried this personally yet, but I just love, I love the pitch on the website. And it's from Y Combinator. So, I mean, you know, it's kind of a startup that's backed by a very decent, decent organization. But here's what it does. You kind of log in with your bank account, your credit card, all that good stuff, and then it goes to work. It scans all your transactions, and it looks for the stuff that it knows could be quote-unquote written off, right, in various categories. So software expenses, transportation, industry education, subscriptions, home office expenses, working meals. And when it finds something that's kind of questionable, like let's say you went to Starbucks, it will text you and it will say, hey, we saw you went to Starbucks yesterday for $14.32. Was that a meeting with a business client? And you reply yes or no to that text, and they will automatically categorize that for you. And apparently they're using a combination of machine learning, algorithms, but also real kind of bookkeeper accountants on the back end. So it automatically categorizes everything. You can export all your write-offs into tools like TurboTax or H&R Block at the end of the year. And they say this is great for real estate agents, actors, rideshare drivers, scooter chargers, freelance designers, freelance writers, photographers, Airbnb hosts. And I identify with this. So even though I've got a job at KTLA, I do a lot of freelance stuff. And, you know, I wrote a book last year. I do a lot of speaking engagements. You know, I have a lot of little things that generate side income. And these are things that I have to kind of keep track of. And it's not very easy, believe me, with a full-time job and two kids, you kind of let a lot of this stuff, I don't know, was that an expense? Was that not an expense? But with an app like this, it makes it a lot easier to keep track of this stuff. And come tax time, you know, it's much easier to just kind of hand this stuff over to an accountant or at least have the base to help do this stuff yourself. So again, it's called KeeperTax.com. That's the website. It's an app. It's $10 a month, which, by the way, I think is well worth it because this stuff does not come cheap. If you want to keep track of your taxes and all that stuff, I mean, you're talking $120 a year to keep track of all of your business expenses. That's a pretty good deal. And the money it's going to save you on the back end when it comes to headaches and all that stuff with your taxes, probably a lot better. Finally, of note, HP is recalling 78,500 laptop batteries that can pose fire and burn hazards. So I'll let you go to the website to kind of see. It's hp.com/go/battery program 2018. So this was something that they originally announced last year, but they have continued to kind of, I guess, get the word out about this recall. Maybe more batteries are recalled at this point. But again, it's laptops that were sold between 2015 and 2018, HP ProBooks, HP Pavilion, and HP 11 notebook PCs, and HP X360. So again, a couple of notable models of HP laptops. You can download software from HP's website. In 30 seconds, it will tell you if your laptop is one of those affected. If you have an HP that you think you bought between 2015 and 2018, it's probably worth it to just check it out and see if you can get a battery replacement. That's going to do it for this week's show. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. I do appreciate it. And let me know on social media what you think of the podcast. The best thing you can do is share this with your friends. I sincerely hope that you learn something every week and there's some sort of takeaway. I promise I will get the calls back on the show very soon. I do love taking the calls. That's the best part of my job, is really helping folks out with their technology, because I'm following this stuff on a daily basis. So the least I can do is help you out. 99% of the emails I get are very simple to answer. It's just stuff that, you know, I've got the basis. You know, I'm comparing different apps. I'm comparing different products and services. I've played around with 99% of this stuff. And so again, when you're asking me, hey, Rich, do I really need the iPhone XS Max, or will I be just fine with the XR? I usually just send you back a couple of questions like, hey, well, what's most important to you? Is it, you know, size? Is it pictures? Is it screen quality? And I can answer these things. It's the stuff that would take you guys a lot of time to research, but I'm happy to do it for you. So again, the best thing you can do for me is to buy a copy of my book, 101 Handy Tech Tips for the iPhone. It's available on Amazon. It's got 4.5 stars for ratings. A lot of people very happy with that book. Thank you so much if you've already purchased a copy. I do appreciate it. Or just spread the word on this podcast. So tell people, hey, I'm listening to this Rich on Tech podcast. You should download it. It's for the average person. It doesn't get too mumbo jumbo techie, but it's stuff that's kind of interesting. And hopefully you pick up a thing or two from every show. You kind of, you know, store it away for the future, and it helps you out in some way whenever you need it. But again, following me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all those good places. I am at Rich on Tech. You can also watch me on KTLA. I'm on in the mornings, 5 a.m., 7 a.m., 9 a.m. hours. And thanks so much for all your likes and retweets and all the comments you leave me on Instagram. I'm trying to reply to all those DMs. I know it's tough. All right, if you want links to anything I talk about here, go to my website, richontech.tv. I have not been posting the links in the show notes because I feel like if you're like me, I listen to a lot of podcasts. If I hear something interesting, I just go on Google. So if it's an HP recall, I just Google HP recall. I usually find the information. If it's something that's really obscure and you can't find anywhere else, I will post it in the show links. Other than that, let me know if that's working out for you or if it's not. I'm happy to hear your feedback. I'm Rich DeMuro, richontech.tv. I'll talk to you real soon.